Welcome to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Welcome once again to the NBA bubble in a season like no other. This year's NBA Finals have suddenly become great theater. Fascinating to see how both teams react after that thriller on Friday night. Hammer time for LeBron James. James goes to the rim once again, lays it up and in.
Trying to win himself another ring.
Oh, Rajon Rondo putting on a show.
This game has completely gotten away from Miami.
James goes inside, the flush and the foul. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Organization want their respect, Laker Nation want their respect, and I want my damn respect too.
Welcome to The Jump. We are coming to you live for the last time inside the NBA bubble here at ESPN's Wide World of Sports Complex at Walt Disney World Resort in Florida. I'm Rachel Nichols. I'm here alongside NBA champion Richard Jefferson.
Thank you.
Who has spent the last 4 weeks, I would say, here in the bubble.
Yeah, I'm at that space where I can't complain because everyone's been here a lot longer than me.
I was supposed to thank you and your family for sacrificing and being here. I don't know if it's a sacrifice for your family to be away.
No, they won. Everyone won. Except for the people here in the bubble. But, you know, I do what I can do when I can do it. So I'm glad I can be here. Glad I could be a part of this. It's been a pretty interesting experience, once in a lifetime. Hopefully it's once in a lifetime.
I was going to say, we are coming to you from the spot that's sort of the actual center of the main NBA part of the campus here. This is where the Lakers had their victory party last night, which was a little weird only because the Heat players are staying in the hotel right behind us. I saw Bam Adebayo walking around the lake, seeing the Lakers party.
If you win a championship in the other team's city, oftentimes, you know,
but you don't have to see it from your hotel room window in the same way.
Yeah.
By the way, this video you're seeing is there was the NBA held a party for its staff that the media was also allowed to come to. And some 90s dancing broke out. I was personally a bit disturbed.
Yeah, no, there was definitely some Running Mans. There was no Worms. I was a little disappointed, maybe because it was the concrete. But, yeah, there was a lot of dancing broke out. Everybody was happy. Ultimately, they weren't happy that it was over. I think everybody was there was a portion of that. But I think everybody was really, really happy that it got done, that we were able to accomplish what we were trying to do.
Which is really actually something that I don't think we can say enough. Zero positive tests, right, for the NBA bubble.
Despite my best effort.
Hand-washing, masks. Yes. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Testing, it's almost like that could all work or something like that for the country event. It is amazing. All right, coming up, I will ask Richard what happened to the Heat last night after pulling off an impressive win in Game 5 to extend the series. Stick around for that. But first, shortly after LeBron received his fourth Finals MVP trophy and Anthony Davis won his first NBA title, they sat down with us to reflect on this most unusual season in the NBA. Take a look.
That means a lot to represent this franchise. We just want our respect. Our organization want their respect. Laker Nation want their respect. And I want my damn respect too.
Every playoff journey is incredibly hard to get to this moment. But how much did this one feel to you like survival of the fittest?
I think you just said it, Rach. I mean, it's survival of the fittest. And whoever could, I feel like, you know, keep the main thing, keep the focus on what you're here for. Once you stepped on this floor, was gonna survive. So for us, it makes the outcome much more sweeter.
Now you've dropped hints here and there, but we can be honest with America now. This was very hard, and there were nights and days, I know for you, where you started thinking through what was worth it and not. Can you explain what some of those moments were like?
Yeah, I mean, just when you're a guy who loves his family and does it for the family, you have moments where you question, is it worth being away from your family like this? Is it worth it?
Do you guys remember one night or one day where you're sitting around and it was hard?
Man, that was damn near every night. That's why we was always in each other's rooms.
That's why we was always together.
We are each other's family, entire team. And, you know, we stay in each other's room playing video games, doing whatever we can to just stay together. Because we know it's going to be tough and we wanted to make sure that we had each other's backs. And, you know, it showed on the floor and off the floor. And realize, like I say, you call your family and they say, no, you're not coming home. What? They'll win the championship and then come home. So they give you that reinsurance, like you said, to make this all worth it.
I know you, and I know that you consider this not just a win for you, but for the style of basketball you play. You said earlier tonight, I heard my whole career be more like him. We know that him is, of course, Michael Jordan. This title is going to reignite all those debates. Do you see yourself at the center of that discussion, or do you think with the way you have won these titles, you have gone off on your own separate trajectory?
That's not for me to question or wonder or debate. I think that's what, you know, you guys would do.
We never do stuff like
that. Yeah, I know, you never do stuff like that.
Never debate anything like that,
you know,
ever.
For me personally, I have a way that I play the game. I have a way that I lead. I have a way that I challenge my guys and challenge myself. But more importantly, at the end of my career, I just hope I made a lot of people proud for the way I approach the game. And that's all that matters to me. And there's going to be debates. That's what it's all about. Mm-hmm. We call it barbershop talk. Mm-hmm. People are going to do it. So hopefully you do enough to, no matter which way it sway, they say, okay, I respected him no matter what.
So that was a very nice answer, and I know that you meant it.
That's the truth. That's the truth.
I know, but then you also said up on that stage with me a little bit earlier, give me my damn respect.
Yeah,
what does that mean?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, at the end of the day, there's always going to be disrespect. There are people that still doubt me even at this point in my career. And they're going to continue to do that as long as I put on a uniform, which I've realized. But being with him and being with those other 13 guys on the floor, it doesn't matter. It drives me, so I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate it. But at the end of the day, if I'm making Anthony and my other 13 teammates proud, and then nothing else matters.
You're a Chicago guy, so this is going to be maybe the toughest question I ask you. Is he the greatest of all time?
Man. He different. I mean, it's like, and I'm from Chicago, so I love Jordan. Like, all I can say is that it's a tough-ass debate. There's no, like, you really we gotta speak facts. Mm-hmm. And he definitely made a case for himself by winning this championship tonight.
You guys know how much I love Michael Jordan. I wear number 23 because of Michael Jordan. When I first got my first pair of Jordans, you couldn't tell me nothing. So y'all can do the debates. Y'all can figure that out.
Let's talk about this guy and the relationship you two have then instead. You guys have been friends since you played on the Olympic team together in 2012. It's been a bit of a big brother to you for years. LeBron, AD told me how he took a Greyhound bus from Chicago to Ohio.
He told me
to be in your camp.
Yeah.
But still, until you actually play together, you don't know how it's really going to fit. Why did it work so well for the two of you?
Two alpha males who put everything to the side, no egos, no jealousy, to go out there and just compete. You know, and it's not smooth on the way. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always gonna be ups and downs, bumps in the road. And we had our moments where, in games, off the court, but at the same time, we knew what the goal was. And that's for us to be champions.
You're a free agent this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make the Laker faithful feel a little bit better about that? Do you expect to be
around? Nobody's talking about that right now, Rach.
Enjoy this championship, and that's what I have an agent for. So,
no, we're going to enjoy this night.
We're going to enjoy this.
Yeah, that ain't got nothing to do with nothing.
We don't know. You know, we
don't know nothing.
Came here, got it done, and like I say, we'll see. We'll see.
That smile might tell me something. But I can switch from your future to your future, Mr. James.
No, he's not retiring.
Well, I was going to say, you called him, Anthony, you called him old during the trophy ceremony. You're turning 36 in just a couple months. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar played in the Laker uniform when he was 40 years old. Is that your future?
I don't know what my future holds. The only thing I can do is control the present. I can control what's going on right now. And I'm happy to be a Laker. I'm happy to be a champion. And that's all I can say.
Now, you're the MVP of this finals. Have you told him that as the years go on, he's going to have to start carrying you?
He carried me a lot. Not of all season. And I just try to do the same thing back to him. when I had down days or down games, he picked me up. If ever he ever had a bad game, it wasn't too many of them, I just tried to pick him up. I am my brother's keeper.
Yep. Yes, I am.
What's up?
Pretty cool to see those two together. The relationship they have is pretty genuine and pretty sweet. Thank you to both of them for sitting down and taking the time on such an important evening. And here is what The Jump recommends for today. Zach Lowe has a great piece on ESPN.com and the ESPN app right now on why the GOAT debate between LeBron and Jordan is different. And hey, look at this. We are welcoming in ESPN senior writer Zach Lowe, who has been with us all year round to cover this extremely long season. Zach, when I say year round, I really mean year round. LeBron said he wants his damn respect. So how does last night change the debate that has been had over and over and over and over again between him and Michael Jordan?
I think the terms are different. Look, I mean, LeBron is still going. That's the crazy thing. He's almost 36 years old. When the chips are down, he's still the best player in the NBA. That's incredible in itself. He's probably going to be the all-time leading scorer in NBA history. He's already number two if you combine regular season and playoff points. He just passed Karl Malone. And, you know, this season, he did it with defense, too. He bought in from day one on defense, which is something we haven't seen from him since Miami, probably, and grinded the entire year. And, yeah, I think, you know, he'll never be 6-0 like Michael Jordan in the finals. He's 4-6. He had a very human moment in 2011 against the Dallas Mavericks when he melted down. But the cumulative longevity, the endless peak, I mean, the peak is still going on. It's really incredible.
Has the debate changed for you, Richard?
Well, I think it's always hard to do this debate before an individual's career is over unless the individual has, like, surpassed that person, right? And so I think it is difficult because we see LeBron every single year he adds something else, whether it's an assist title, you know, being the you know, best player on the best team in the Western Conference, something that he had never done before. So it's like, you know, to you know, is he gaining ground? Yes. Like that's obviously, if Michael Jordan is at the mountaintop, every accomplishment, and it doesn't have to be scoring titles, it could be assist titles, it could be, you know, little bitty things that closes that gap between him and MJ, but it is very, very close.
I like the random goat that was just thrown into that montage. That's really spectacular producing there.
Yeah.
Look, we talked about this a little bit the other day, that there's a Mount Rushmore, right, of the greatest players in NBA history, and that once you are comparing players between eras where there are, frankly, such different rules. Mm-hmm. And such different, you know, when we go back to Bill Russell or Kareem, different levels of competition with how many teams there were in the NBA, who got to be on them, either globally or just coming from an American talent pool, that sort of thing. It's almost like you're comparing players playing not completely different games, but somewhat different games, which makes that harder as well.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And it's getting more interesting. We will just say that. All right, coming up in our final make or miss segment of the 2020 season. Of course, that means the 2021 season's going to start in like 2 days.
Yeah.
We will recap how Lakers players, brass, and fans celebrated in Orlando and in the streets of Los Angeles. Keep it locked. All right, well, I want to shift to the losing team last night because Miami deserves our respect. They went down fighting in this series. On Friday night in Game 5, the Heat really stunned the Lakers. L.A. had plans on clinching in the Black Mamba jerseys, but Jimmy Butler, or in Eric Spoelstra's words, Jimmy Effin Butler, had 35 points and his second triple-double of the finals to extend the series. Now, Game 6 was, of course, a very different story. The Heat got in a big hole early. They trailed by 28 at the half. They never recovered. But look, you have to look at the series as a whole. Miami really relished that underdog role this entire postseason. Did they just kind of run out of gas last night, Zach?
I mean, look, the severity of the score, you did not expect 30 points in the second quarter. But the fact is, as you said, Rachel, they were an underdog before their three best players got hurt in game one. Obviously, Jimmy Butler sprained his ankle, didn't miss any time, but Bam did. Dragic, poor guy, barely played in the series. And every one of their three of their four losses were by double digits. So it's not surprising that, you know, this happened to them in a game. It was a little depressing. And the two games they won required absolutely superhuman efforts from Jimmy Butler. So they were an underdog. And sometimes this happens to underdogs against the best player in the world.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, look, if you look at the Miami Heat's two wins, like Jimmy Butler was amazing. But to play 47 minutes, and we talk so much about great players in this league, whether it's Michael Jordan or Tim Duncan or LeBron James, and these guys would put up those performances every single night. Jimmy Butler did it, you know, two nights, and it looked like he was really struggling out there. And it's still a compliment to Jimmy because of this. We know at Jimmy's very best, he can go toe-to-toe with the greatest players in the world. So it is still a compliment. He has definitely moved up the ranks of respected NBA players over the course of this run, and it is something that should be applauded.
And you have to remember, too, that in a normal final schedule, if that even exists anymore, there would be a couple more days between games because there would be travel built in at this point in the series, all of that stuff. So he would normally have more recovery time. Instead, in the bubble, it's every other night. So those 47 minutes were really right there for you.
And that's why they would do that, Rach. That's why they would give guys 2 days rest, because these guys exude so much energy that to improve the quality of basketball with the travel, giving 2 days allows that.
And again, he was trying to make up for Goran Dragic missing most of the series. Bam Adebayo, who never said that he was playing hurt, was definitely playing hurt. And Jimmy Butler was playing hurt. Obviously, as you noted, Zach sprained his ankle and all sorts of other things in the first game of that series, and maybe earlier in the playoffs, too. He played hurt. We'll never know. Coming up, we're going to talk a little bit about the Lakers having an incredible postseason run. But the future is bright in L.A. beyond this year. Is Anthony Davis ready to take the keys from LeBron? We will discuss next. Richard's already nodding his head. You want to stay tuned for this.
Welcome back to The Jump, presented by Dell.
Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still hanging out with Richard Jefferson, Zach Lowe. We're going to talk a little Anthony Davis, who is now an NBA champion and can become a free agent. Everyone assumes AD will be back with the Lakers. I assume AD will be back with the Lakers. Richard, with LeBron about to turn 36 and approaching what will be his 18th season, is 27-year-old AD ready to take the keys to the Lakers franchise from LeBron, or is that still a bit off?
No, not yet. He's not yet. Like, this was just the first, like, first understanding of what it takes to win a championship. He has all the ability, he has all the talent, but you have to learn. And if, you know, Jimmy Butler was a great example of that. I guarantee you, Jimmy Butler had never been as tired as he was in the NBA Finals because he learned what it was to give his all. And I think Anthony Davis had some ups and downs in this postseason where you were looking for him. And when you take the keys, that means that you are showing up every single night, no matter what. And he's close, but he's not there yet.
I agree with RJ, actually, and when I hear the who has the keys metaphor, I tend to take it as who's driving the offense, who's organizing the offense, who's got the ball in their hands to start the key possessions. That's still going to be LeBron. And the beauty of this partnership is LeBron, as he gets even older and the minutes pile up and maybe he loses like a teensy bit of a step, he can play that organizing role, that orchestrating role, but play it and average 20 points a game, 22 points a game, 22, 10, and 10, or something like that. And AD can average 30, 32. That's the beauty of how they mesh together. But in terms of who am I trusting to organize the big possessions in every game, it's still going to be LeBron James, and I think it's going to be for a while.
Well, no, the one thing I was going to say is, like, I have a feeling that LeBron James leading the league in assists was sending a message that, like, I will adjust my game if more players want to come here. Like, I can still facilitate. And I think that was a message
Him
doing that. Yeah.
That's so interesting. It's funny. I had a conversation with Jeannie Buss last night after sort of all the hoopla died down. And we were talking about that contract that she gave Kobe Bryant when he was clearly not going to be himself after the Achilles injury, the giant number that a lot of people said crippled the franchise for the next couple years. And why did they do that? And was it really worth it? And her point the whole way through is we want to send a message to the rest of the league about how the Lakers treat our superstars and the people who have done things for us. And I think that that is part of what made LeBron James want to come to the Lakers. It worked, right?
Well, yeah, 100%. And also, that was sending a message. Now, there's other little messages in. But also this, if LeBron James is chasing after Kareem Abdul-Jabbar for the all-time leading scorer, you know damn well they want him in a Laker jersey. So they're going to do everything to make sure that he is happy, that he wants to be there long-term. And that's going to be most likely paying for somebody well after their prime. And so I think that's, you know, very similar to what they did for Kobe.
And paying Anthony Davis, of course, which you guys heard in the first segment. I asked AD about his free agency. He gave a very coy answer, which I don't completely understand, since we all know the Lakers will offer him the maximum amount of money they can offer him, and then he will take the maximum amount of money he can take.
Years.
I don't know what he's trying
years.
To bargain for.
Yeah, years.
Years
of
flexibility options.
And there's some holes in this Laker roster. We saw it. There were some holes. And so obviously the Lakers are going to have to go into the tax. They'll be a tax team. So it's still, it's like he now has some leverage. Like, okay, well, who are you guys going to go get? You can go get one player. You can go get, show me that you're going to add to some of the gaps that we had in this roster. Then I will sign my deal. So you got to keep your leverage for as long as possible.
Well, and I also thought maybe he was playing coy, as you put it, because the pandemic has thrown the cap situation in complete chaos. It may be best for him to sign a one-year deal and do a long-term deal somewhere down the line. All those decisions are very complex. It may take time. But, yeah, I mean, he's coming back. LeBron is going to stay on the team. And as long as those two dudes are on the team and they tinker with the supporting cast here and there, they're going to be right in the mix and toward the top of the mix every single season until the wheels fall off, because those guys are just that good.
Well, remember, of course, LeBron, with all the one-year, one-on-one contracts, to sort of make sure that he held Dan Gilbert, for example, accountable on that team you were on, Richard, to make sure the right pieces were around. Who's LeBron's agent? Rich Paul. Who is Anthony Davis's agent? Rich Paul. Here we go.
Everyone's
all right,
agent.
Coming up, what was your favorite moment in the bubble? We will discuss with our bubble reporters. Malika Andrews, who spent more than 100 days here in the bubble, joins us, as does Dave McMenamin. They're going to come hang out next. Stick around.
Don't want no other driver on the job. Nah, only car 85. They'll take me a time.
Welcome back to The Jump. Now, you might see a few of us on camera here when you watch at home, but make no mistake, it takes a village to get our show and so many other shows on the air from here inside the bubble. So everyone at The Jump just wanted to take a second to thank our producers here in Orlando, Andrea Pelkey, Melinda Adams, Jim Matulka, Eric Lunston, Jessica Shobar, for all of the work they have put in to help bring you The Jump every day. I also want to thank our staff working from our Los Angeles Production Center and our remote staff working from home as well. This show would not be what it is without you, and you can decide if that's a good or a bad thing, but it is definitely, definitely true. All right, I do want to welcome some more folks who are very familiar with life here in the NBA bubble, Malika Andrews and Dave McMenamin. Welcome back, my friends. Malika, you have been here for a long time. What would you say is the most challenging aspect of living and working here in the bubble now that you have had the full bubble experience?
I love that you just keep reminding me how long I've been here.
Well, I love that the producers, when we talk about this, start showing people fishing and boating, because I don't think you're going to talk about the fishing and boating.
I don't think I never went fishing and boating once. I had a thing with, I didn't want to make the fish bleed. It was a weird, I had a weird thing with that. But I think the most challenging part of being here, it's hard to pick just one thing, but the days piled up on top of one another, and every single day, all of us were trying to tell these challenging stories in many ways to the best of our ability. And so whether that was the Bucks Wildcat strike or an insane game or just kind of everything in between, we had this unique experience that we got to relate to the players in a way that we don't usually get to.
Yeah.
And trying to relay that, but also keeping in mind the magnitude of what we're attempting to do, can be weighty at times.
Yeah, I would say, like, journalistically, it was making sure I was staying abreast of the stories that were going on in this country, like what happened to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. So when I was writing about the players' response to these stories, that I was informed enough to be able to take what they were saying and plug it into a story and have the reader get caught up to where they should be as well. So that was a challenge I don't normally do in my everyday, you know, 15-year experience covering the NBA, because we haven't had a moment like this. I think beyond that, just the day-to-day random rainstorms. And
which
my
Rachel
hair kind of gets sloppy if it gets
anytime.
Wet. Like, I have to deal with that. That's kind of a problem. I think just losing track of time. It was such an odd schedule, because oftentimes we're working till 3 a.m., 3:30 a.m., and then trying to get up for shoot arounds and trying to mix in stuff in the day and not just be completely dominated by work. I think those were the two challenges for me.
Well, because you have no outside life. I mean, there's literally no, I mean, like your kids are going to school in the real world, but you're not there. So you don't have the Monday through Friday. You don't have that kind of thing. There was a great quote where I think Brad Stevens said at an availability, and it was toward the end of a day, he goes, "Someone told me it was Labor Day today." Mm-hmm. And I just thought that was such a telling sentence, because in the quote real world, you would never have to have anyone tell you it was Labor Day. You would know by barbecues and, again, his kids not going to school and all kinds of stuff like that. Someone had to tell him it was Labor Day. I think that was one of the biggest challenges for me, too, was the fact that this world inside the bubble was so singular and all-encompassing. You had to remember the people that you were telling the stories of what was happening here to outside of it weren't here and weren't experiencing all of this. So you're kind of translating from a foreign country. And I just think that also the sort of regular norms of how we tell a basketball season are different, right? Because you have these like tent poles of basketball. Teams play in their home arenas and they travel between games and series. And the sky is blue and the grass is green, but none of that was true here. So
it's
purple
here.
All of that. Could be, you don't know. Do you have a favorite moment from the bubble?
Oh man, again, it's hard to pick one, but from a basketball standpoint, maybe it's a little bit of recency bias, but game five of the finals, I mean, that instantly felt like a classic between Jimmy Butler and LeBron James. I mean, Jimmy Butler going off for 35, 12, and 11 when his team was in a must-win scenario was just incredible, especially when you consider what Jimmy has been going through these past couple of years trying to find his fit in the league. Yeah. And then towards the end, he was saying how this feels like home. Mm-hmm. Miami finally feels like home. He says he knows he's a little bit abrasive sometimes. He knows he's a big personality. But in Miami, that's what they're looking for. That's what fits. That's what the culture of the Heat is. It is getting in each other's faces when things aren't going wrong, where things are going wrong, mm-hmm. holding each other accountable. And so watching that was awesome. And then, I mean, important story-wise, mm-hmm. I think covering what the Milwaukee Bucks did and the subsequent actions that followed just felt weighty in a way that sometimes when sports is looked at as the toy department mm-hmm. of the newsroom, that felt like it transcended being the candy floss of a newsroom.
So you guys know me a little bit, and I don't really like change, and I'm a bit of like a traditionalist when it comes to things. So I wasn't sold on the bubble in terms of the basketball product through the exhibition games and through the seeding round, through most of the seeding round, until the last night where the Nets played the Blazers. And the Blazers had to win to get into that play-in game. Yep. And it was going to be the first play-in game that we ever saw in NBA history. And the traditionalist in me is like, why do we need this? But I was also kind of intrigued. And it was a fantastic game. Both teams scored in the 130s. Dame Lillard hit that shot from the logo, scores 42. Caris LeVert leading an undermanned Nets team with 37 points. And the arena may have only had 250 people in it total, if that. But you could feel the intensity of it. And it made me feel good about what we were heading into in the playoffs. Because I was still worried, like, would this feel like a legitimate championship? Right. Mm-hmm. Are we doing all of this just, you know, to go through the motions and not feel like there was a validation to come from it at the end? Mm-hmm. That game let me know that if we do these playoffs, it's going to feel right.
You can't knock the basketball here. You just can't. It was fantastic. Now, you mentioned the Milwaukee Bucks and what they did, and it was so powerful to not just see them just basically say, you know what, we've had enough, and we don't have to have some big plan to just tell you we cannot play basketball right now. I thought that had a lot of power, and obviously it had an effect on athletes, not just around the country and other sports, but around the world. We saw golf, tennis, and sports being played in other countries, them do the same thing. But what do you think is going to be the lasting effect now that the bubble has popped?
Truly, I think only time will tell. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to be a pessimist about that, but I do think we've heard folks in the league office say, well, we expect things to get a little more, quote, back to normal. And what does normal mean? I understand that in that context, it means probably Black Lives Matter coming off of the court, maybe less of those messages being incorporated around the arena. But normal also means systemic oppression and police brutality. And so it is going to be in many ways up to the players to keep this conversation going. And there, time and time again, we talk about how the oppressed, it shouldn't be the responsibility of the oppressed to fix oppression. Mm-hmm. And so until not only do the owners follow the lead of the players, but actually take their own initiative to do something more, I am skeptical of the lasting change it can cause. That being said, I think this was an important step for the NBA to take, because if you look back to when Colin Kaepernick first kneeled during the national anthem, the league sent out a memo saying, remember, mm-hmm. if you do this, there will be consequences. And that seems to be something that the league is moving away from. Mm-hmm. And so I think that in that way, this could be a first step, a domino, mm-hmm. but it will largely be up to not just the players. And it isn't the responsibility of these players necessarily. They are not activists. They are players who have taken up a cause that they care about. But there's going to be so much more work that needs to be done in the world, mm-hmm. in the United States, for lasting change to take place. But athletes may very well be catalysts for that, I think.
Well, last night before Rachel sat down with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, I actually walked with LeBron from his press conference to the spot on the court where they were setting up for the interview, and we chatted about a couple things. But one of them was, what happens when you don't have all these cameras around here, you don't have these media folks here asking you the questions about the way you want to enact social change? And he said that he's been anticipating this moment. He's already been reaching out to his team of advisors. And between now and November 3rd, as the election approaches and he has the More Than a Vote initiative, he said, I need to double down, if not triple down, on my efforts. And certainly that won't necessarily affect long-term change, but he's not walking away with, I got my trophy, I got my finals MVP, job's done. He recognizes that he has to continue to walk the walk behind the message.
I do think activism is contagious, right? That once people see other people doing it, feels a little bit more comfortable, feels a little bit less scary, feels like you're a little bit less out there on their own. And I saw some of the younger players in the league really take leadership roles in this that I think are going to carry forward. So I hope maybe that's part of the lasting change. We'll have to see. To your point, the story is still being written. I feel lucky that we all got to cover it. Malika, the reason I keep reminding everyone how long you've been here is because it's such an accomplishment. It really is. The work that you in particular did here and the dedication that you and Melinda Adams, who was the producer who was here longest, putting into this is something that should be remarked on. So we're all very grateful for that.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Coming up, who is going to have the tougher road back to the finals next year, the Lakers or the Heat? We'll discuss that first, though, as we've been talking about social change for the public good. Here is a public service announcement from the More Than a Vote initiative, which is reminding everyone that just because the bubble is over, the fight against voter suppression is not.
To us, this was always about more than basketball. We said we would bring the fight here. And while the season is over, the work is not.
The Jump is presented by the new XPS 13. Every little thing is everything.
Throughout the highs, throughout the lows, you stay even keel, stay in the moment.
What's left right now?
Nothing. It's win to win for us.
It's got to be better in game six and close the series.
James goes to the rim once again, lays it up and in.
Trying to win himself another ring.
Oh, Rajon Rondo putting on a show.
This game has completely gotten away from Miami.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers.
One of the greatest feelings in the world. Right up there, one of the greatest accomplishments I have.
Welcome back to The Jump. After a historic 2020 season in the bubble, many questions about the 2021 season are now cropping up. Jimmy Butler's confidence in his team, that hasn't changed. When asked about next season following the Heat's loss last night, well, let's just say he was confident about the Heat returning to the finals. Take a listen.
We're trending in the right direction. We're going to learn from this. We're going to get better. and we're going to come back. We're going to come back. We'll be back, as we were all saying in that locker room. But we got guys that want to do it. We got guys that already want to get back in the gym and get to working at this thing.
So let's look ahead to next season. Caesars William Hill released their 2021 NBA title favorites. Remember, this is for gambling purposes, not necessarily NBA experts, but they say the Lakers are favorites to repeat, followed by the Clippers, Bucks, Warriors, and Nets to round out the top five. Miami has the seventh best odds on that list. Richard, I'm interested in who you think has the tougher road back to the finals next year, the Lakers or the Heat?
Oh, I think it's the Miami Heat, without a doubt. But I also look at their roster, and I believe if they add some, you know, some, one or two pieces, and again, we're talking about a team that wasn't entirely healthy, but they dominated the Eastern Conference. And Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Bam Adebayo, all of these guys are going to be one.
Do you think they'll have a tougher road back?
I still think that they're going to have a tougher road back than the Lakers, but I'm talking about the Miami Heat really dominated the Eastern Conference. But it's still going to be a tougher road back for them, in my opinion.
I think they both have incredible. I think the Lakers probably have the tougher road, but they also have LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So by definition, their road isn't as tough, I think, as Miami's. But the story is with the Warriors and the Nets, we just get these microwaved out of nowhere championship contenders back. Luka Doncic is going to get even better next year. The NBA is going to be absolutely loaded. The Clippers get another year of seasoning after whatever the heck happened to them in the bubble. Both conferences are absolutely loaded. Both teams are going to have to fight like all heck to get out of their conferences.
No, I'm super interested in what happens with the Bucks next year. Obviously, they know that Giannis Antetokounmpo will be on a show me kind of situation, yeah. Right? We don't know for sure that he's not going to pick up that.
The Bucks should be on a show me to Giannis.
That we don't know for sure he won't pick up that Supermax, but it certainly would seem that a good idea for him would be to make the Bucks prove it to him one more season. So they will be in a more desperate situation. And I think you guys are right about the Clippers. Just because it doesn't work the first year doesn't mean it's not going to work.
Ask Bron and the Heat.
Well, Richard, the Cavaliers did not win a title in 2015. They won a title in 2016.
Denver?
That's what you're ranked.
Well, obviously they waited for me to get there, which was smart.
I mean,
smart.
I don't know about all of that. Thank you to Richard. Thank you to Zach. Thank you to Malika Andrews. Thank you to Dave McMenamin for joining us today. Thank you to our incredible producers. And thank you to everyone from the NBA and the wide world of sports for taking care of us here in the bubble.